Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the first day of April 2020. April Fool's Day. Although I didn't really plan anything for April Fool's Day, because I don't know. What are you going to say? Well, I've got coronavirus. That's stupid. Somebody's going to make that joke. It's not going to be me. I don't really have an April Fool's joke for you, now that I think about it. I'm Derek Hunter, by the way. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, rating and reviewing on iTunes, spreading the word, all that good stuff. I suppose I could do a somber monologue about how this will be the last episode of the... It's not, though, because I already let the cat out of the bag. I could just hit stop, but I'm not going to do that. Too much respect for something. I don't know. Anyway, thank you all for listening. I got an email before we get to the interview today, which is pretty awesome. I'm super excited. Adam Baldwin, my buddy Adam Baldwin, agreed to come on the show. You've seen him in movies and TV. Some of the best. Chuck. If you haven't seen Chuck, I didn't tell him during the show. I've told him in the past. I've never watched Firefly. I just haven't. But I love Chuck, and I love The Last Ship. And I love my body. We talk about it during the show. You don't need a precap, for God's sakes. But I got an email from a listener who is very upset with me, and I'm not really sure why. It's unclear to me. It was about how I have become a Democrat. It's like, okay, I'm a Democrat now, but it's because our rights are being stripped from us, and I might as well become a Democrat. I've become too Maryland, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to read the thing, but it's, let's just say it's not super duper friendly. I think you might have unsubscribed, and that's fine. If what I say causes you to unsubscribe, but last thing I want to do is be a burden to you, except a financial burden. I'm happy to be a financial burden to you, but otherwise, I'm just not into that. The people who, I don't understand why you can listen for a year, though, and then disagree to a matter of degrees on something else, and then go, that's it, screw you, I'm taking my ball and going home. Like, okay. Okay, it's your ball. Take it home. I don't care. I've got my own balls. Anyway, thank you for listening and tuning in and telling a friend. Spent about almost an hour with Adam on the Skype machine today. So that means that I don't really have to record all that much original material. I will say that the White House Coronavirus Task Force briefing was particularly informative and if you haven't had a chance to watch it, I recommend that you go and watch it. I'm not sure, and I'm going to be skeptical here just for a second. This projection that will undoubtedly be the drumbeat across headlines across the country tomorrow is between 100,000 and 200,000 dead. Now, maybe that's just because it's a number it's difficult to wrap my mind around in terms of the death toll over the next 4 to 6 weeks. But it seems excessive just looking at the numbers now. I am no mathematician by any stretch of the imagination. I was particularly good at geometry, but geometry isn't really math. It's more logic. God, I loved proofs. Did I mention I was a bit of a closeted nerd? But the numbers don't seem to add up unless the next 2 weeks are going to turn into an absolute hell space where people are dying left and right. I honestly don't know if these models are accurate, if these people have any idea what they're talking about. Now, medically, I have no doubt and have no questions for them. They understand virology much better than I do, who caught some viruses, but that's it. But numbers, I understand. And the patterns, I understand. And watching these numbers over the past 2 to 3 weeks, something dramatic has to change, or the assumptions they're putting into these computer models is wildly wrong, and we have overreacted. I hope that's the case, to be honest with you. I would much rather have overreacted than underreacted. But one of the things I talked to Adam about is the best case scenario is one in which we come out of this and look back and go, God, that was nothing. People overreacted. It's like preventing a terror attack. You can't really prove that you saved, you saved lives, sure, but you can't really prove that, how devastating it would have been, what would have done, especially if you got it in kind of the early stages. They were planning a massive attack that would have killed hundreds of thousands of people. It's not really going to be remembered like that, I don't think, because you can't really prove something that didn't happen. You can't prove that something was going to happen that didn't happen. So the best case scenario for coronavirus is we look back and everybody's pissed off at all the politicians going, wait, it was nothing like you said it was. Now, hopefully that's as a result of their actions and not a result of their overreactions. But I guess at this point, I don't really care as long as we come out of this so we can get our lives back on track and our country and economy back on track. But it's a weird situation where politicians are fighting desperately for a situation in which they look like they exaggerated what could happen, if that makes any sense. I don't know. It's much better than the alternative, that they didn't do enough and the bodies pile up and the death toll is much higher than the estimate. But at this point, it just seems unfathomable to have 100 to 200,000 dead, somewhere in that range. Even 50,000 seems like, because you hear, the death toll went up 200 today. Well, it's going to have to go up exponentially. It's going to have to become horrific if these models are right. Maybe I'm not really questioning the models. Maybe I'm trying to cope with those numbers and just imposing some wishful thinking. I don't know which. I don't really care which. But it's just something that occurred to me listening to these briefings that are wildly informative and interesting as television. It's weird, the feeling of disconnect you can feel while watching these things, mostly because I think that many of us, myself included, don't want to wrap our, it's not that we can't, we don't want to wrap our minds around what they're saying. Because if what they're saying comes to pass, it'll be awful. Anyway, I'll have more time to explore this on another show, because I'm just fleshing this out right now while I'm doing the setup for Adam Baldwin. So let's get to it first. Before we do that, it is Wednesday. It is April Fool's Day, which has nothing to do with what I'm about to say. This is when we play our pre-recorded tape commercial with Ronnie McMullen from AncientLifeOil.com about your CBD oil. So let's get to it. Joining me on the phone right now is our lovely, lovely sponsor and proprietor of GetTheTea.com, Ronnie McMullen. How's it going, Ronnie?
Great. How you doing, Derek?
I couldn't be better. I couldn't be. By law, I don't think they would allow me to be better. Look, I want to talk to you. Everybody's concerned about their immune system right now, and there are certain ways, nothing is perfect, but there are certain ways to help boost your immune system, and GetTheTea.com isn't just tea. So tell us about what you've got out there to naturally help us boost our immune system.
Well, I call the immune system, I kind of put it in terms like this is our shields, like shields up. And most of us out there, because of the foods and the water and blah, 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 our shields are down. So when the cruddy virus comes up, or any cruddy virus comes around, then we are susceptible to that issue. If our shields are up, it changes the odds of getting a virus by majorly. So with this being said, if you look up the benefits of just garlic, okay, and a lot of people, they run and they go get garlic pills. And garlic is really good, but the allicin inside the garlic, that's the key point. And most of the garlic pills that you get on the shelf are running 2 or 3%. We're running 100% allicin. And here's the thing. One of our pills of Allicin Advanced is equal to 35 cloves of garlic. It's an extract, so it's very, very powerful. So if you were going to run it with vitamin C for you to really have your shields up would be, you'd have to be taking so many milligrams. I mean, way over the top. So I just kind of sit back and I'm not worried that I'm going to get anything because my shields are up. And of course, the age plays into it and a lot of other issues. But long and the short of it is if you just look up garlic, Google garlic and what it does for you. Now imagine taking 35 cloves, except you don't smell like garlic. You don't have garlic breath, so you can still have a relationship. So it's all good. And it's on the front page. It's on sale.
And it's just a good idea to keep your shields up all the time, yes. Ronnie. Go to getthetea.com. Look up the Allicin Advanced. It's right there on the homepage. You're having a sale now. And then if you enter promo code Derek at checkout and click the apply button, you get free shipping on top of it. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ronnie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Ronnie, and thanks to you guys for tolerating the horrible quality of my microphone setup at the time. It's gotten better, as you'll hear when I talk to Adam Baldwin, starting right now.
All right, so as we've been doing, I always yell into the damn microphone. I probably shouldn't do that, but as we've been doing throughout the coronavirus crisis, pandemic, whatever you want to call it, I have been talking to people around the country to get their sense of what's going on in their neighborhood, and today's no different. He sounds like he's counting piles of money there, shuffling around. We're joined by actor, superstar, Adam Baldwin. Welcome. Thank you for taking the time, Adam.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks for having me on the Daily Caller podcast.
Yeah, you know, when you messaged me that you liked that I was swearing, I just about fell off my chair. First of all, I wasn't surprised that you liked that I was swearing. I was surprised that you listened. What do you, shouldn't you have some, you're Mr. Hollywood, shouldn't you have better things to do?
This town is shut down as well. Everything's shut down now. except for the grocery stores.
That's true. Now, Los Angeles, California in general is been on strict lockdown for a little while now, or stricter lockdown. We just joined the ranks the other day here in Maryland. But how is life in Oblivion out there?
We consider ourselves very fortunate out here. We have open spaces. Everyone kind of self-isolates in their cars to begin with anyway. So I think the incidence of infection is not as high just by the nature of the beast out here. I'm sure it will rise. I'm looking forward to more comprehensive testing to see exactly what the infection rate is. We don't know what the infection rate is at this point. So all the numbers are just up in the air, except we know we have hard facts about who's actually died or who's in the ICU, all terrible, tragic infections and deaths. But we don't know how many people have been subjected to this virus. I have close personal family and friends who absolutely swear to me that they had it in January.
That's pretty common. And Rush Limbaugh was talking about this yesterday on his show, that California, he pointed out how California has a large Asian American community, a lot of people from China back and forth, especially in the San Francisco area. And it's not ground zero. It would seem, now this is no knock, and thank God for whatever reason this isn't the case, but it would seem like California, with that in mind, and so many flights directly to China, would have significantly higher numbers out there. So you're saying, because I have two friends who swear that they've had the flu that knocked them on their ass like they've never had before, back in January. You're saying that you know people who basically swear the same thing.
Well, they traveled up to Jackson Hole to go skiing over New Year's, and they flew back. There was a blizzard, and they got out of there, but they were able to get to Salt Lake. So somewhere in transit, and a couple days later, they started feeling poorly, and then it really hit them maybe a week to 10 days later, and they were down for 2.5 weeks with it. And they just thought it was this weird, bad virus, fever, cough, and I'm convinced that it was, well, I don't know 100%, but they're convinced that they had it.
And that's very common, and we're not going to know until we can test for antibodies. So that's kind of the weird thing is, when you look at this situation that we're in now, if by the best case scenario, things go as well as they possibly can, we're going to look back at this and think, God, we really overreacted to that. And that's a weird situation to be in.
Everything in life is a trade-off. You have to, and as a government, the government entities, they have to err on the side of caution. I get that. But at a certain point, you walk down the streets here, you see all these businesses closed. Are they non-essential to the individual Americans that have put their blood, sweat, and tears and time into those non-essential businesses? They're certainly essential to those citizens.
Oh, absolutely. And these people took the risks and put everything on the line. They were the engine, the gasoline of the engine of the U.S. economy. And now they're in limbo. Yeah, you get government loans that can be forgiven. The government's doing what it can to make people whole. But There's one thing being financially whole, and there's another thing feeling whole as a person. I tell you, what I do, I enjoy the hell out of it. I do 3 hours of radio every day. I do an hour podcast. I do 3 columns a week and whatever else floats my boat. But it's not nearly as satisfying personally as roofing. When I was a roofer, you could look back at the end of the day and go, I put a roof on that building. I still drive around Detroit when I'm back there and point out to my wife, like, I put the roof on that building over there. I put the roof on that building over there. There's something different about a tangible thing, and starting a business is that kind of tangible thing. And it's got to be absolute hell to sit there and watch, even if it's withering slowly, watching your business wither.
For example, on the west side, there are places that are very expensive rent-wise. Those rents are going to come due. Let's just take a jewelry store, a little small mom-and-pop jewelry store, for example. Those stores never get as crowded as a grocery store does. So why can't they be open with a couple of customers in there shopping for their little jewelry items? It just doesn't make sense to me. This can't go on.
No, we've had, before we were on full lockdown here, we had bookstores, smaller bookstores, like you're talking about the jewelry store, that you could call up and reserve a half an hour in the store to yourself. It's just you. And I suppose if you want to bring somebody you live with, you could come in and reserve the store. There was a lot of innovation going on, as happens in the United States of America. And government came along and said, nice innovation you got there. We're going to put our boot on it and kill it, which as government does. There has to be some kind of middle ground, I would think, sooner or later. We'll give you a couple of weeks. We got it. But at some point, we got to unkink the hose.
Well, as a journalist, I'm sure you can delve into what exactly are these emergency laws and how deep can they go? I understand when there's a pandemic and there's infection widespread, but if it's localized, I know you want to protect everybody as much as you can, but at a certain point you go over, they keep talking about where's the peak of infection. Okay, well, where's the peak of despair for people that have been driven out of business or into bankruptcy or being kicked out of their apartment? Where is that peak of despair where you're just going to get diminishing returns? At a certain point, we're going to have to get a handle on this, and it's here. That time has come. They're all saying now till the end of April, but that's not going to work for most people.
No, it won't. And it's like I had interviewed Sean Parnell last week, I think it was. They're all starting to bleed together. And he's a former Army Ranger in Afghanistan, 440 some odd days. And I said, you know, you have a mission and there's no good way to go about it, but you still have to go about it. At some point, you have to make the decision that somebody's going to have to be the first one in the pool, see whether or not the water's cold, you know, and I don't know who that's going to be. I suspect it'll be a governor who steps up before the president, because it seems like the bureaucrats have the president pretty well in check. He wants to do it. He wants to open up like Wyoming, where there's not many cases, or Montana, where everybody has 15 square miles to themselves. But I think if once you do that, there are going to be pressures on Missouri to say, well, if Wyoming and Idaho are doing this, maybe we can do rural Missouri. And you can't do rural Missouri without people in St. Louis going, hey, wait a second. And nobody wants to be the first domino to fall. In the meantime, people are scrambling to adapt. One of your passions, Adam, is education. This is a perfect time, a prime time for parents to see what their kids are learning and how their kids are learning. How do you think that's going to go for the average parent at home trying to teach their kid or work with their kid through their homework?
Yeah, it all comes down to the individual family and the individual communities. You have to start growth from the family and the local communities, and people are adapting. They're doing Zoom meetings. I know K-12, which is Bob Bennett's outfit. They have a lot of great resources. I think it's a great opportunity for parents to check in with their kids, but I'm afraid that a lot of parents will just be overwhelmed themselves with their own anxieties, and they'll just turn on the television and say, well, let's watch TV. I do see a lot of parents running around with their kids outside, but yeah, it's scary as hell, man. It's scary as hell, and yet I think we will come through stronger.
But yeah, no, I have no doubt about that. And the good thing is, if you've got teenagers, you get to learn whether or not you're raised jerks or not. And maybe you can correct that. I think a lot of parents are going, holy shit, my kid's an asshole. I can't stand this guy. We've got to really have a heart to heart talk when this is over about.
Well, I would take away their cell phone.
That's
for
true.
Certain for hours during that. I would take away their cell phone for 8 hours a day so that they would have to read a book. Or, you know, watch a great movie. If you're going to watch a movie, watch some of the classics with me. Where are you going to go? You're going to go run away? Where are you going to run away to? You can't. So,
what are you watching? How do you pass the time? Because you're an avid golfer, and yeah. You tweet pictures of golf from beautiful courses around the world. I don't know how well you play them, but you get to play them. I play crappy public courses here with buddies. Yeah. But you can't anymore, which seems like golf and tennis would be the perfect sort of pandemic sports because you're far away from everybody else. Everybody can get their own cart, but no, they can't do that. So what are you doing?
It's the perfect social distancing sport, golf and tennis. And yet for purposes of fairness, it seems that they have to shut that down too, because the collective can't have special rights for golfers. So they have to close down these wide open spaces where you can get exercise. And it's mostly adults who play the game anyway, who have the time and the money to play. So they're smart enough to socially distance. There are ways of doing it, and the staff can clean off the equipment, but it's not fair. I know in other states they have open golf courses, but California, that's just not okay. It's an overreaction, and it's a shame. Yeah,
the coronavirus really isn't going to be in the rough where my slice lands. It's not going to be over there.
No, it's not even going to be. It's not even going to be in that. It's not even going to be in the dirty cup. But I was watching Governor Cuomo's press conference this morning, and he was talking about. I don't know if you caught that, but he was talking about basically the collectivization of the hospital networks, private and public, and he was. His idea was to basically merge them all, and if one link in the chain breaks, say Elmhurst Hospital, then the whole chain breaks. And I just didn't sound right to me.
I think they're all planning. They're all planning for the worst case scenario, and they're all acting like the worst case scenario is here. The president is acknowledging that there is a worst case scenario, and he's hoping against hope to avoid it. It's a real study in views of the world, really, if you ask me, because the liberals have we need to nationalize everything right now. We need to nationalize the means of production. I mean, Marx is rolling over in his grave because he's sexually aroused at what the Democrats are saying here. And the president, all he's doing is saying, I would love to open up by Easter. And they said, well, he set a deadline and we're never going to read. It's not realistic. And that becomes a story for 2 weeks. These people are god-awful, horrible human beings, just awful human beings.
I think those that are pointing fingers now are the ones that people are starting to reject. While Trump is a counterpuncher, if someone points the finger at him, he's going to point back and shut those people down because, look, he's between a rock and a hard place. And Michael Knowles has a cool podcast. He was talking about he's in a catch-22 or a COVID-22. If he opens everything up and people die, he'll get blamed for all the deaths. If he keeps it shut down and the economy crashes, he'll be blamed for the economy crashing. So he's pointing out in his press conferences that we're avoiding 2 million plus deaths by the actions we're taking, which is the middle ground. Somewhere in the middle ground, if it's God, you know, one death is too many, and he said that as well, but the press is not going to let him get there because they want this crisis, as they wanted all the previous crises, to kill his presidency. And this one, I think that the majority of American people are going to look at it and go, well, no, I can't go along with that. Right.
People who have a problem with him, even people who have a problem with him go, wait a second, he didn't create this virus. And there's no perfect solution. Hindsight is 2020, and the Democrats live their life in the rearview mirror when it comes to other people. Yet you out in California, when Nancy Pelosi or Bill de Blasio in New York are asked about, hey, wait a second, you guys downplayed this quite a bit at the beginning. Nancy Pelosi traipsing through, she parked her broom in Chinatown and was encouraging other people to come there. Bill de Blasio encouraged people to go out for Chinatown, and they don't want to look back. I don't think that hypocrisy is being lost on the American people. That's the American people are a lot smarter than the Democrats give them credit for, even though many of us elect Democrats.
Agreed. And it's a perfect example of how federalism was designed to work. The president can't do it perfectly. The governors aren't going to do it perfectly. But the more power that's more localized, the better for everyone in the communities and in the states to make a judgment on their leadership. And I think California, while it's probably over the cliff and it's going to be a blue state, hard blue state for the duration, there's a lot of people here looking at Newsom and the legislatures here and the city council's going, what are you doing?
Yeah, is there no point at which the people go, what the hell, man? This is HB5, I think it is. Is that the one that's killing all the independent contractors out there that even has leftists upset?
I think it's AB5.
AB5. And yeah. Even leftists are saying, wait a second, this is killing our jobs. And the response has been, well, that's a shame. You know, that's about it. That's a shame. Our union buddies want this. And so good luck working, find a new way to work, or find all you got to do is get your company to hire you full time, which they're not going to do, which is why they set up their business the way they did in the first place.
I think what you're trying to say is learn to code.
Exactly. If only there were some computer-based skill one could take a course for. that's why I see all these more journalists are losing their jobs at a time when we need them more than ever. CNN headline said, well, CNN could use some journalists because they don't seem to have any. So maybe they could hire like half of those people.
But you're a wordsmith. I fancy myself a wordsmith. And one of my pet peeves in this whole run-up is they can't get the language straight on what to call this. And I think that's purposeful. It's purposeful language manipulation or dialectic. It's the Wuhan virus. It's the China virus. Yeah. It's the Chinese virus. It's COVID-19. It's the coronavirus. What do we call it? And I think the Chinese, the Communist Party over there is looking at, ha-ha, we confuse them.
Oh, they're laughing hysterically. They've been playing these social justice warriors like a fiddle. They're useful idiots, and they're just idiots. And so often they find themselves on the same team. And that's, but the thing that drives me nuts, Adam, is the numbers game that they play. You know, we don't have numbers of the number of people who've had it because we just can't test everybody right now. The priority is people who have symptoms. But when they say we've had a 500% increase over the course of the night, it's gotten devastating. 500% up in the death total. And you go, holy shit, 500%. That's horrifying. But then you find out it went from 5 to 25. And you go, okay, right. It's still bad. Each death is bad. But why not report the numbers? Rachel Maddow last night was talking about how in Missouri, there had been a 600% increase in the number of cases in the past week. So I thought, how many? It was like 1,031 now, not then, after. And like, okay, well, that gives it a completely different perspective. If you give both, you're trying to convey information. If you only give one, you're either trying to downplay it or you're trying to scare the shit out of people. If you give the percentage and the percentage is bad, you're trying to scare people. When we became the number one country in the world with the most corona cases, the media just reported that fact, straight up raw numbers. You have to believe China, which is garbage. But if you look at per capita, we are far superior, better shape than all of Europe. Any individual country or all the countries put together. But they don't report it that way. When President Trump says we've tested more people than any other country in the world, that's absolutely true when it comes to raw numbers. But per capita, suddenly the media says not per capita. Suddenly they discover per capita and they start playing this numbers game. And it's not that they're giving you false information. It's that they're giving you information in a false light, which is almost worse, in my opinion.
Was it Churchill that said the only statistics I trust are the ones I falsified myself? Some wise person said that. I think it may have been Churchill. But anyway, you're right. And it's a scare tactics. So I don't really watch television news anymore. I'll tune in maybe an hour to watch.
Does it exist?
I'll maybe watch Tucker. I will watch Rachel Maddow. I like that balance to see what her narrative is versus what Tucker's narrative is. And that's about as deep as I'll go, unless there's some main newsmaker that's on one of the shows. But that just keeps the clutter, the static out of my head. The rest of it I can read.
Right. Now, the only show I make sure to watch every day that I can is Special Report with Bret Baier. Because yes. I have my own opinions. That show actually conveys news, and it gives some time. It gives some depth to the story. It's not 30-second bits in a 22-minute broadcast like the networks. So that's the one I make sure to watch.
Yeah, that's great, too. He's a straight news guy. He's just on during golfing hours.
Well, now you've got that. Do you at least have some wiffle ball golf balls that you go out in the backyard and chip a little bit or something?
They're
can you set up a makeshift?
It's given me a great opportunity to work on my short game. So there's a silver lining for me there. But that I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm towards the end of my career time. I've saved some money and own my place. And I'm in a kind of a good position to weather this storm. I have a lot of sympathy for those that do not. And I still think that on the bright side, we're going to come through it. There's going to be some pain and suffering, obviously, but there's nothing worse. My mom she's locked away in her retirement home. She's not even allowed to leave her room. So I'm calling her every day to check in on her, and she's out in Michigan, but she's scared to death.
What part of Michigan?
Kalamazoo.
Okay. My dad lives up in northern lower peninsula of Michigan, Roscommon. And he lives in the woods. After my mother passed away, he stayed in the house, and it's a secluded area. We used to hit golf balls from the driveway across the street because there was nothing to hit. That's how secluded it is. And I'm calling him every other day. We got five brothers and sisters, so everybody's calling him every day. I'm sure he's probably sick of it by now, but we're making sure that nobody, you don't need milk. You don't need milk. Forget about milk. And we get milk delivered. And I got him some Omaha steaks and stuff like that. And he's like, I'm just going to get fat sitting here all day. And it's like, well, you know what? That's fine. I'm fine with that. None of your friends can come over. None of the grandkids can come visit. Nobody can go visit, period. But he's weathering it well, thankfully. Sounds like your mother is more confined, which is horrible because I bet she's got friends there that, you know, you just want to shoot the breeze with. And
right. You want to play you want to play cards or Scrabble or something.
Right.
And, she can do that a little bit on her computer. She can play against the computer. She hasn't quite mastered how to get online and play against others. But, she, you know, we keep trying to get her to do that.
Oh, if you can get them all iPads or get her friend's iPads and download, preload them with like the Scrabble app and everything.
That's the next step. But she's been through world. She was a kid. She was born in 35. So she was a kid during World War II. She doesn't remember it as much as my dad did. My dad passed about 8 months ago. And he said, so he's missed this thing, but he's seen worse. The World War II generation saw worse. The economic.
Are we a nation of pussies, for lack of a better word, or maybe that's the perfect word? Because this has happened before. Yeah. It's bad. There's no denying it's bad. But we have this sort of Chicken Little mentality now because of we're out of problems. We have it so much easier than any other time in human history, by far. And so we hit a speed bump and we close up shop and go home, take our ball and go home. Are we becoming a nation of pussies?
Maybe it's just those that are dialed in online on Twitter, on Facebook. And I don't think the vast majority of people spend the kind of time. I mean, I invest my time trying to figure out where the truth lies. And I think I'm pretty objective where that is. I lean right, but I can be persuaded if someone on the left had a good argument about a particular policy that might work. Most of them, if it's socialistic, I don't, but right. If it's a local issue that could be solved, like for instance, out here, there's a thing called Heal the Bay, and they've done a lot of great work. I mean, they're about as left as they come, but they've done a lot of great work, and Santa Monica Bay is cleaner than when we first came here. So at the local level, it can work. On a national level, it just can't work. Too many people, too many different ideas involved. I forget where I was going with that. I'm lost. Where were we?
Well, you made a point. I don't know. I've been drinking all day. But you you made a point that I found interesting, because we see this all the time, where, especially in the age of Never Trumpers, all these Bill Kristols of the world going, everything. They're getting what they've always said they wanted, a large chunks of it. And they're not happy. In fact, they're condemning it. So it makes me think that they were frauds. But it's weird how people like Arianna Huffington and David Brock, who were hardcore conservatives, supposedly, suddenly they switched on a dime, and every position they used to hold, now they're the opposite. I get it. You're right that over time, your opinion on one or two things or a couple things, as more evidence comes into light, as you learn more about it, can definitely change and evolve. But evolution is different from suddenly sprouting a tail and gills. One day you just wake up and you've got tail and gills. I've never trusted anybody who flipped on everything. My best friend is a radical nut job. He's also a doctor, so he's calmed quite a bit. But I much prefer somebody who I believe than I believe who's trying to play me. And so many of these people in politics, I believe, are trying to play people.
Well, Bill Kristol, for example, I think it's one of two things, besides his fragile ego. It's either follow the money. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his funding is, blah, blah, blah. It probably started when he was pissed off at Trump's style, or Trump snubbed him over something. And so he's got his ego in a corner, and he just absolutely can't do it. Or whoever funds him, either that or it's daddy issues with his dad, Irving, the great Irving Kristol, and it could be that. I look at daddy issues or follow the money.
It could be a little bit of both.
You look at the malcontents who are constantly complaining. It's always the, you know, Trump's fault or Bush's fault or whoever is in charge's fault. It's like a father issue.
Well, it's always easy to complain about whose fault it is when you sit on the sidelines. The safest position in the game of life is on the sidelines with your arms folded, judging everybody else. And there's good money in that, sadly, now, these days. And you can find yourself a billionaire patron.
Yeah, it's also psychological displacement for the most part. You can call Trump whatever you like, bad orange man. There's no repercussions for it. But if you actually start addressing who the real enemy is, the real enemy walks the earth. The real enemy is the one that's doing most of the killing. And people are just afraid to name that real enemy. So it's easier just to, it's Trump's fault, or it's Bush's fault.
Well, who is the real enemy, Adam?
The enemy is evil, and yes. evil walks.
People don't want to even admit that it exists. For God's sakes, after 9/11, we had people going, "Well, what did we do to deserve this? What did we do? It's our bad foreign policy." There is a contingent on the left, almost exclusively, exclusively as I've found, people who look inward for blame, and that's part of the reason why I think there's such a visceral hatred of Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't take that blame. He's not going to sit there. Republicans of old would take a punch to the face and go, "I'm sorry, have I hurt your hand?" And Donald Trump doesn't play that game. He's not interested in that game. And they don't know how to handle that because they're not used to anybody standing up to that. In many ways, I think Bill Kristol is from that school as well. You don't fight back. That's impolite. You lose like a gentleman, like the Bush model. You lose like a gentleman. You sit there for 8 years while Barack Obama blames you for everything under the sun that he's screwed up, and you say, "Well, it would be wrong for me to weigh in." Like, do you have not any dignity at all? Do you not have any? Like,
well, Bill still gets to go to the cocktail parties in Washington, and he gets the good tables at the restaurants in Washington, and he lives that cushy life, even if his candidate of choice is not in power.
Is a testament to the brilliance of capitalism that somebody with no discernible skills or abilities can make a good living. So, you know, at least he's got that going for him. Listen, Adam, I got to ask you some questions about your career, just because we're always looking for movies to watch. My personal favorite of yours is My Bodyguard, which was your first movie. Uh-huh. It's just such a class. Everybody's kind of been in that situation, not necessarily hiring somebody to do their fighting, but the bullying aspect. I think it's an important character building part of life. But of your projects, TV shows, I think I know what the answer is going to be. But of all of your projects, what was your favorite to do?
It's hard to pick one. I picked them generationally, or more like mile markers. Like My Bodyguard mm-hmm. was the first one I did. I love that. It means so much to me. I got to work with Mr. T at the height of his career. It was the hiatus between season one and two of the A-Team. He was the biggest star in the world, and I was just a stupid kid watching these people go crazy in front of me.
I love watching DC Cab because I look at all the places. I'm like, that's still there. I know where that is.
Yeah.
It's not going to win any awards.
And then Full Metal Jacket, I think, is probably movie-wise my favorite long-term, just because I got to work on it for so long with Stanley Ooh. Kubrick. I was on that show for that movie for 9 months out of my life back in 85, 86. And then the Firefly Serenity experience. I did a little X-Files. I did Chuck. And then I did a show called Chuck on NBC for 5 years. And then... on TNT, we did The Last Ship, which is a story of a bird flu, an ancient primordial bird flu that was unleashed upon the world and weaponized, and a lot of allegories in that. If you're looking for something, ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking for something to binge watch, I suggest you find The Last Ship as a TNT show. We were on for 5 seasons. And I highly recommend a binge watch of that during this time.
I still have a bunch of it from the last season on my DVR. And that actually, Adam, brings me up to my next question, because I have a couple of friends who work on the Rush Limbaugh show. You may have heard of him. He's a local radio guy. I think he's a DJ. I'm not really sure what he does. But
comedian. Entertainer.
Two friends who work on the Rush Limbaugh show, and in The Last Ship, well, your character John Casey and Chuck was a conservative, big fan of Ronald Reagan. Obviously, you brought a lot of yourself to that role. But in The Last Ship, there's a scene, and my friends sent me a screen capture of it, of a bookshelf. And in the bookshelf, right there, third from the left, is Rush Limbaugh's "See, I Told You So." Now, there's speculation amongst Rush Limbaugh staff. The jacket has been removed, which actually makes the name more prominent. Yeah. There's speculation amongst the Rush Limbaugh staff that was your copy of the book, and you brought it in, and you made that happen. Can you confirm or deny that rumor?
Well, first, let me make it clear to your audience, Derek, and to the Rush Limbaugh staffers, that in Hollywood, it's been my experience that the majority, whether it's a small majority, but in my experience, those I've run across are center right. They live their lives as most Americans do, on the center right, and they just keep their mouths shut. And the loud mouths who are lefties, they just go along and they drive them to and fro. They hand them props. They give them food. They, drain the toilets from their trailers, that sort of thing. They're surrounded out here. And it's the silent majority that shelved, that filled those bookshelves with props. And that was one of the props. So that was one of our center-right crew members that was able to adorn that shelf. Also on that shelf, I believe, was David Brock's book. And I think there's a Clinton book in there somewhere. It was a good variety.
It tells the diligence of the Rush Limbaugh crew that they spotted Rush Limbaugh's book, though.
The spine, I had that book. See, I told you so. The spine has it in gold leaf lettering right down the spine of it, so it stands out. No, I can't take credit for that.
Right. Well, it's actually, that's interesting, because when you see somebody like other actors, like the Will and Grace cast, tweeting out, God, I want to know who these conservatives are in Hollywood so that I can never work with them again. You're fine. You're established enough, and you're comfortable with your skin, but your average gaffer, your average camera operator, they have to kind of go, oh, shit, I've got to pull back into my shell a little bit more and make sure that there's nothing that could lead. I don't laugh at a joke, or I don't make a joke. Like, they have to live a little bit in a, not necessarily fear, but concern.
Yeah, I'd say that's true, but it's also just don't be a dick at work. That's an ethos that we try to maintain.
It's a good rule of thumb everywhere.
Yeah. People hate Trump so much that there's a guilt by association that goes on. Even if you just mention a little bit about, well, that could be working for us. You know, at least the economy's getting better and unemployment's down. How dare you, orange man, bad. Rawr, we can't be friends anymore. Oh my God. I got purged from a show business text thread merely for pointing out the fact that those two people that poisoned themselves with aquarium cleaner, that was fake news.
So a big donor to liberal causes, including a group about how Republicans deny science, drinks aquarium cleaner because there's a similar sounding ingredient in there. You point out how that might not be an indictable offense for the president of the United States, and the mob tossed you out.
Well, I was careful not to bring up politics at all. And someone else posted that initial story, and a couple other people went, oh my God. And I said, yeah, that's going to be big if true. And then I pointed, and then I followed up with the Axios retraction, and turns out it's fake. I think maybe what got him is that I said, can you blame them for wanting it to be true?
Never going to Barbara Streisand's birthday party, Adam. Yeah, you're know. Never.
So I can't swim in their pool anymore, but that's okay.
Sneak over there at night, pee in it. What are you watching these days? Like, you talked about watching classic movies. God knows there's enough hours in the day, and you're confined in your house. What do you kick in when you got a couple hours?
Been watching Ozark, the last the season 3. It's fantastic. Of course, we watched Tiger Hunter
or Tiger King.
Tiger King.
I haven't watched it yet. I feel like that's something you have to watch all at once.
This whole goddamn 19 coronavirus thing is that bitch Carol Baskin and her weasel husband's fault.
I don't know what any of that means.
You will, but you will. It's terrible. It's a clown show. It's terrible. It's a terrible clown show. And just grab some popcorn and watch an episode or two.
Destroy my faith in humanity, or make me feel better about my own life by default, or anything. Is there any redeeming quality to this thing? Because it doesn't seem like it.
You get to see some beautiful big cats.
Okay, I guess that's something. But so you're just binge watching TV.
Ozark. That we went back in to watch a little bit of the old Twilight Zone recently. Curb Your Enthusiasm is fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. Whatever pops up. There's so much crap, though. There's so much just crap.
You know, that's kind of the thing. Your industry is highly competitive. There's no question about that. You know, there for every actor working, there are 15 waiters somewhere dreaming. Uh-huh. But now there've never been more outlets for things. I'm surprised that the quality hasn't dipped more than it has with everything. As somebody who's worked in this industry since 1978 or 79, what do you think of the, is it one of those things where if there were 500 Major League Baseball teams, there'd be like one good player on every third team, but the quality, the level of competition would be about the same because everybody would suck about the same. How do you view the explosion in opportunities in the entertainment world?
Just more outlets, more money in the worldwide market. China, for one, that market is very powerful. We can see why it has so much influence, just because of how many sets of eyeballs they have. They buy products and they open it up in sort of a controlled capitalist communist mix. Right.
You can be free until you piss us off, and then we'll throw you in a gulag.
Yeah,
basically.
So there's
don't
that.
Don't get too.
But there was a time where it goes back to education. There was a time where people were educated. They knew Shakespeare. They knew the classics, and those were the people that were in the positions of power who bought scripts and put them into production, and they didn't mind sitting and reading a story not told by character dialogue. They could explain the visual and show the visual. The great filmmakers, the Sergio Leones, they show that great sweeping visual in those close-ups in the eyes that tells the story there with the swelling music, and you got it. You got the story through the visual. But as the education system started to dumb down and generations started to change over, people got impatient and they preferred to read. If you look at it, you know what a script format looks like. There's dialogue down the middle, and that's short and sweet. You can read that quickly. You can almost speed read it. And then there's the slug lines describing the scene in between. And the shorter the slug lines, the more dialogue, the easier it is to read, the easier it is for the people buying the scripts to go, oh yeah, I like that story. Let the actor tell it in dialogue.
Well, now everybody, it seems like all you got to do is fall out of a car in front of the Netflix offices and they give you a pilot.
There's that South Park bit where they have that big sort of warehouse call center, and the kids call in and an operator picks up. Hello, Netflix, you're greenlit. May I hear your pitch?
Of your projects, of your career, is there anything that you can't watch? You just look at it and you go, oh, geez. Even if it's just my hair was so awful, or you didn't like the Patriot is a great movie, but you're a bad guy in the Patriot, and you sold out this country. I don't know what the hell's wrong with you.
Well, context-wise, or contextually, back in the day, the Loyalists weren't the traitors.
Oh, all right. Go ahead and justify it if that's what makes you sleep at night.
Well, that's the literature that I was reading and doing my research. My due diligence shows. And also, that character had a redemption point. He came back into the battle, but it didn't make the final cut. He came back into the battle, and he drew down on Mel, and Tavington, the bad guy, said, Wilkins, shoot him! And I looked at Tavington, and I said, nah, you're a fucking my inner monologue was, nah, you're a fucking scumbag. I raised my pistol, nod at Mel, and I ride off into the battle, and Mel proceeds to kill Tavington. But that didn't make the final cut.
Why didn't it make? Were you upset that didn't make the final cut?
Yeah, like I was upset when they didn't show me cut the head off the sniper in Full Metal Jacket in the end. Yeah. It's like, wait a minute, where did it go? Fortunately, this time the producer gave me a heads up, so I knew it was gone.
Now, wait, when you were supposed to cut the head off the sniper?
Yes.
It was supposed to be shown. What has there been? Did you ever talk to Kubrick about, hey, what happened to that? Or did you not? You don't
yes.
talk to Kubrick about stuff like that.
Well, no, I asked him why he did that. He said, well, it was just too gory and it would have given us an X rating. So it basically came down to that.
You ever been because, cut from a movie?
Have Were I been like, cut completely yeah, out of a movie?
Yeah.
Well, yes. How to Make an American Quilt. I had a flashback role where I was, I'm in the movie, in a photo, on the mantelpiece, so I still receive residuals. Because I'm recognizable, on the mantelpiece in a still photo.
Is it like your deleted scene in a DVD somewhere or something, or is it just gone?
They just got rid of all the flashbacks. I was just in a couple of the flashbacks, so that was gone. When movies run 3-4 hours, somebody's got to go.
Well, it takes a while to make a quilt. What about roles past? You always hear about, like, you know what, I decided not to do this one, and then it turned out that it was the role of Han Solo in Star Wars. Have you had any movies where you look back and you said, shit, I should have been in that movie? You know, even if it's a small role, it would have been awesome to be in that movie.
There are two auditions that I blew. I just wasn't, I choked or whatever back in the day. One was in Bull Durham, Nuke LaLoosh.
You would have been standing basically in a garter belt on a pitcher mound?
Yeah, I mean, Tim Robbins is great, and he won that role. I blew the audition. It's not his fault. You know, I all credit to him. He's great. And the other one was Mr. Pink in Reservoir Dogs when I auditioned for Tarantino.
You're a big dude. You're a muscular dude. You're as tall as I am. When we had lunch that time, it was like, yeah, you're like 6'5" or something.
Yeah.
And Mr. Pink, I don't know, maybe it's not in the dialogue. I've never thought of it in another way. He's such a weaselly, squirrely kind of guy.
Wait. Am I thinking of the wrong? Is it Mr. Who's the one that Michael Madsen played?
Oh, Mr. Brown, I think.
Mr. White? Oh,
you'd have been the badass. Mr. White was Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, whichever one was the Michael Madsen role. I can't remember.
How'd you blow the audition? Was it for Tarantino?
Yeah. Just didn't click with it, man. Didn't work that day. Choked. Who knows?
You could have had another cutting off part. You know, he cut off the ear. He didn't show that either. You know, you could have.
Well, here's the thing. This was before my kids were really up and running. And you'll see as a parent of young kids, as they grow older, well, I had them when I was young. I was still young, and I still went into some auditions from a place of fear. But now, now that my kids are grown and I've sort of succeeded and done all that, I just come from a place of love. And if you love the game, you love the material, you love yourself, they're going to love you. You may not be right for it, but you're not going to blow it.
Have you ever wanted to direct? You directed, I mean, you chucked a lot of seasons, a lot of episodes. I'm surprised you didn't direct an episode or two. Did you ever try? Do you ever want to?
You don't get enough sleep. You know, here's the thing. My kids were all at an age where it would be fun. I know I would be good at it. But there's so many people that already do it. I'd rather just kind of do what I do.
Who's the nicest actor you've ever worked with?
Henry Winkler.
Really? Arthur Fonzarelli?
Yeah. What'd
you work with him on?
It was actually like a play reading. Burt Reynolds was great.
I wish I'd met Burt Reynolds.
Another play reading.
Burt Reynolds seems like the coolest. Like in the 70s, he was the coolest guy. When I freeze in my tracks when I see Smokey and the Bandit on TV, still to this day, It's in heavy rotation right now. And I just stop and I watch it. He seems like Cary Grant in the 50s, seems like the suavest dude that ever walked the face of the earth. Burt Reynolds just seems like the coolest guy. I don't know if he also reminds me of my brother a little bit. So I kind of like that.
But Patrick Swayze was a great guy.
Great guy. He seemed like it. When did you work with him? Was it another
did
player?
A movie called Next of Kin.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh geez. Yeah.
Real sweetheart.
Want to name it?
You know, you find the guys that are at the top tend to be nice.
Why is that? It seems like I've always found that people who found success, like wild success, young, tend to be insufferable. But the people who found it a little bit later, like their early to mid twenties, tend to be much nicer because they have an appreciation for it. Whereas somebody who's been famous since they're 14, they don't really know any different, and they haven't heard the word no since puberty.
I think it comes from the foundation of their upbringing. You know, if they grew up in a good place with good parents and a good education, they tend to be smart and confident and nice. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But you grew up in Chicago. It's a Midwestern thing, I think, too.
It is. I wasn't always nice because I came from fear. I came from a broken home, and I had a lot of fear of lack of self confidence. I got a little bit lucky, and then I had to work at it to get nicer. And then I met my wife, and my life sort of settled into a good place. It's funny
so the
how that
early
happens.
Part of your career, you were kind of one of those Hollywood rat douchebags that we hear about?
Probably so. We had fun. I mean, we were nice to the people we hung out with. I was never a guy that went out to a lot of parties and stuff. I was more of a loner because I like to go and play golf. But I think it came from a lack of knowledge because I was a brain-dead liberal when I was dumb. The term I like to use for people in Hollywood who don't really pay attention and are just liberal. Andrew Breitbart called them default liberals. I call them non-combatants.
Drones.
Well, they just don't know. They don't care. They're into working out. They're into going to the nice restaurant and to the club and dancing. And they just listen to their communist handlers who only read the New York Times and say, no, this is what you need to think.
How did you meet Andrew? How did you meet Andrew Breitbart?
I'm trying to think. I don't recall. I think it was at an FOA meeting. FOA was Friends of Abe, the old secret society that's sort of gone by the wayside now. It's just a fellowship of people in the business who are on the right. And he was there, and we just got to talking, and then we got to chatting about movies and culture and stuff. And
then he got you to write for his site, which kind of you wrote mostly about education issues, but that had to be, was there pause there? Did you think, this could change things? Like, I assume people knew that you were center right, but you'd never really been that public before. Andrew Breitbart wasn't Breitbart as it is now. It was kind of new, but it had to be a moment of pause where you're going, Do I really want to do this? Was there?
I just thought as long as I tried to approach it as a journalist. I mean, some of the things I wrote were just overly written and stupid, just to throw crap up, you know, overly.
But it showed your passion for education, and it showed your interest in the subject. And
yeah, so I tried to keep it fact based, and unfortunately, John Nolte acted as my editor, and he said, "Nah, you can't say that. You got to change that." So I had the benefit of that, but. Probably Twitter is more damaging than blog posts.
Have you found that to be the case?
They've attacked me a couple times, but that's okay. It's not like I didn't expect that. I had been attacked on message boards for years and years, and it just doesn't bother me. I personal attacks, like, okay, I don't care. Then you've lost the argument if you're personally attacking me. Who cares, really?
If an 18-year-old Adam Baldwin comes up to you now, in the current age, technology-wise, and he's going to start a Twitter account, and he feels the way you do now, do you say, dude, all right, I know you want to get into this business, and that's good. Do you say, don't be political? Do you say, go along, get along? You do?
Yes. There's no reason to put your old Adam Baldwin. I've been doing that by the time I out of my, I was like 32 years in. It's like, what the hell? But an 18-year-old, no, man. Just have your publicist do it.
Yes, well, you should have had your publicist refuse my call for this interview. But hey, no, I appreciate you coming on, Adam, and it's nice to get just have a conversation with somebody who isn't my wife or my 2-year-old. The 1-year-old's less verbal, but it's nice to have a conversation and laugh again. We can laugh again. We can still laugh through all of this. It's, you know, Hollywood is drama, but it's also comedy. And we're killing comedy with this politically correct bullshit. Are you hearing people in the business going, oh, this would be a great movie, except we can't make it? Because it's funny, it makes fun of the wrong things?
Sure, yeah, that happens. I think we're in that sort of woke, these scripts are woke and they'll sell, but ultimately it comes down to box office. If it's not selling, then that phase will go by the wayside. I want to end on a positive note. In this time of the Wuhan flu or the coronavirus or COVID-19, whatever you want to call it, what I'm witnessing are people cooperating. They're doing their social distancing. They're trying to keep a stiff upper lip and smile and still hail fellow well met. And I see that as long as we keep our hearts moving strong and forward and not fall into the negativity that so many of the people online try to do, and ultimately come the hell out of the shutdown, we're going to be fine.
It really is amazing to, when I go to the grocery store, I usually go at like 2:30 in the morning because there's nobody there except for just the people restocking and maybe one or two other shoppers. And there's no sense of panic. There's a sense of eeriness. I'll give it that. But when you see somebody, you just kind of, hey, how's it going? And, you know, hey, how are you doing? You keep your distance. But society is much stronger than I think many of us gave it credit for. And that makes me believe that we're going to be just fine at the end of this.
Yeah, and all the gun stores are sold out. So well, my buddies that run the gun stores, they made a ton of money.
They can thank me for the money they made off of me. Adam Baldwin, thank you so much, my friend. And stay safe and enjoy. I guess you don't have to say enjoy the weather in Southern California. It's always beautiful. Try and sneak out, throw like 3 clubs over the fence and climb out onto a golf course with a pocket full of balls and play like 3 holes in the middle that nobody can see it. Do it because it's bullshit. But otherwise, stay safe.
Will do, Derek. You take care out there. And thanks for having me on the Daily Caller podcast.
Thank you.
I love Sam.
Of course, I, being a moron, hit stop recording before he got to finish saying, I love saying that. He actually does listen to the show. He emailed me and said, hey, I like the new attitude after the swearing show. And I was like, holy shit, Adam Baldwin's listening? And then I was like, wait a second, I know him, so it's okay. But still, it's just, it always weirds me out when anybody listens to the show. Every email I get, I'm like, oh my God, there's another person listening to me talk. Just weird. Most of the people I know, like I see on a daily basis, don't listen. Quinn, she doesn't listen. Not even, well, when she's on, she fast forwards to the part where she's on. But that's it. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow with another interview from somebody else around the country, seeing how they're doing and picking their brains about how to pass the time. And actually, I already know who the guest tomorrow is, but I'm not going to tell you. You're just going to have to tune in then. Let's just say we'll talk guns. A lot of guns. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks again.